You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
You get to be so cynical.
Practice.
Sitting here really trying to figure out the proper words to introduce each episode of Positive Cynicism, because I don't know, I am not a fan of just saying welcome to another episode or you're listening to another edition of Positive Cynicism. It sounds so generic, but maybe that's just me. Maybe I need to stop overthinking everything. Maybe. But I will say, you should be checking out the other shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. My 123 Cents, Nerds United, Five Heart Podcast, or just the Five Heart Show. It's one of those. Kevin Hunsberger, Greg Mahochko, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be doing this. Greg set up the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. Kevin started my 123 Cents and had me on a few times to kind of give me the taste of the podcasting bug. So I just want to give a shout out to them for their continued inspiration and just for continuing to do shows of their own. See, this is why I need a good script to go off of, because I just start rambling and there's nothing here. So I should probably just remind you, once again, you can go over to jitterymonkey.com/shop, pick up some merchandise, and I'm recording this opening after I recorded the segment of the show dealing with politics, and I didn't mention it on the show, but I think I'm going to announce my candidacy here. If I can get my name on the ballot, I too will run for president in 2020. And the first step will be to unleash a new t-shirt at the Jittery Monkey shop with our slogan. Or my slogan, I should say. But yes, that will be forthcoming. Just remember to vote smart in 2020. A better vision for America. If I'm elected, Kevin Hunsberger will become my press secretary. Greg Mahochko will be... I'm not really sure. I don't know any other positions. But so spread the word. Follow me on Twitter at Chad Smart. Get all the breaking news and updates into my candidacy. And as far as promises, I'm not going to make any, because all politicians lie and say whatever you want them to say in order to get your vote. And I want to be a different type of politician. I've said way too much now. Let's just go into the commercial break and back on the other side with a discussion of everything that has gone on over the last month in politics. Enjoy.
Hey, this is Hooch.
And this is Hoss.
And we are the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CornNation.com, hosted on JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts. And we are a fan-made, fan-run Nebraska Cornhusker podcast. We talk football, basketball, women's basketball, volleyball, baseball, softball, wrestling. If it's Husker-related, we're going to try to talk about it. And what I love about Hoss is he's the X's and O's guys. He brings the coach mentality to the table.
And Hooch here is the ideas man. He's the skipper of the show, keeping everything running on time and smooth as usual.
We will agree to disagree on that part, sir, but I do appreciate the compliment. And you can catch us during the football season twice a week with reviews and previews of the upcoming games. And the rest of the year, we're bringing you new content every week. CornNation.com, JitteryMonkey.com, because we remind you every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. Go Big Red.
Win the damn game.
Mondale is not simply a KGB agent of the ordinary sense, of course. Mondale is jointly owned by the left wing of the Socialist International and the grain cartel interests. If both these owners tell Mondale to lick the floor before a nationwide TV audience, I sincerely believe he would do just that.
Watch Lyndon LaRouche, Independent Democrat for President, Tuesday, October 23rd.
Yes, that was Lyndon LaRouche, a perennial presidential candidate who you've probably never heard of, but he passed away recently at the age of, I believe, 96. So I'm guessing that that means he will not be running for president in 2020. Godspeed, Lyndon LaRouche. Anyway, I am joined once again by Brandon Cooley, our political expert here on Positive Cynicism. So, Brandon, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back.
And I'm thinking it's been a month since we did a show. I think we need to start doing these shows like every 4 or 5 hours because there's just so much going on in the political spectrum. So,
well, every 4 or 5 hours, someone announces their candidacy for 2020.
So. Exactly.
Seems like.
And there's a new national emergency and a government threatened shutdown, and who knows? So, speaking of the 2020 election, we are recording this on February 17th, and last Monday, which would have been, if my math is correct, the 11th, I sent out a picture of the 84 Electoral College to some friends, which, if you're familiar with your, election history, Ronald Reagan won 49 states in 1984. And I said, if Trump can stay out of his way, I think Trump has, with what we're seeing from the Democrat side right now, Trump should have a Reagan-esque victory in 2020. And then Friday came. And we get a spending bill, which is unfortunately spending a lot more money instead of decreasing money. Trump only got, I believe, enough funding for like 50 miles of his famed wall. And then he declared a national emergency to build more wall. Brandon, I'm going to assume that you are not in favor of the wall, or you do not think that this wall idea is a good one.
Yeah, you assumed right. Yeah, I'm not in favor of it. Well, it's funny you mentioned the landslide because I don't see that happening with any candidate any time in the near future. That hasn't happened since 88, maybe, or like I think George H.W. Bush won a pretty big landslide. But since 92, it's been like it's been split half and half for the most part. Only a few presidents have gotten landslides in the last 50 years, like Nixon did and LBJ and Reagan. He's had a pretty bad week. Trump's had a rough time this last week. He lost the shutdown war, so to speak, or the border and the border wall. He's trying to convince his base that he didn't. And to do that, he wants to call national emergency over this, which is really unprecedented because it's happened before. They've called national emergencies on plenty of things, but nothing political, though, political in nature. All of them have been bipartisan, so to speak, actual emergencies. And I thought it was funny, even in his speech, he said that he doesn't have to do this. But if it's a national emergency, it means that he would have to. So he kind of shot himself in the foot in his own speech. But
yeah, I, from my point of view, I am for border security. I don't think we need the wall the way Trump is proposing it or talking about it. But I think it's, to Trump, it was one of his main goals in his presidential campaign. And so he's just bulldogged to this idea of, okay, we have to have the wall. And yes, to declare a national emergency and say, well, I don't have to do this. Well, then why are you doing it? But that's Trump. His State of the Union speech, I thought was really good because he stayed on topic and didn't deviate and go off script a whole lot, which is fine. But when Trump starts talking, whenever he says whatever comes to mind, that's when he shoots himself in the foot, like you said.
Pretty much, yeah. And with the actual issue that, I mean, he simplified such a complicated issue with this border wall thing. I mean, because it's two different issues. The one, what he's trying to address is illegal immigration. But the real problem is immigration reform, which can be fixed. With illegal immigration, the thing is, it's been on a downward slope since like 2000 or 2001. Like, I mean, it's still an issue, but it's not as much as it used to be. Like, border crossings have fallen. Now, immigration reform needs to, is an actual problem, needs to be fixed. But the thing is, though, no one wants to mention it, but Republicans are not likely to pass immigration reform if they had Congress like last couple of years, because let's face it, like, Hispanics vote Democrat most of the time. So they're just essentially allowing new citizens in the United States to potentially vote against them in states like Texas, Georgia, Arizona, those swing states. I mean, it's not politically in their favor. So the reason why you didn't have immigration reform when they had Congress is because it's not in their best interest. It's, that's why they're using this kind of the border wall as a way of, you know, giving that to their base, essentially.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, going back to what I was saying about the Reagan-esque landslide, I should clarify, I mentioned if people actually think when they go to the polls, it should happen. I don't think it will, because I think, as we discussed on the last episode, is everybody is so devoted to their side, if you will, that few people actually take into personality matters more than issue. And that's where I think, like you were saying, with Hispanics voting more Democrat and minorities even voting more Democratic than Republican. And, you know, I think that's one of the Republicans' biggest issues is how do they get out and get the message to these groups of people that, you know, we're on your side or we're trying to help you. And when you have the Democrats pretty much calling for open borders and saying whoever wants to come can come, and then the Republicans saying, no, we need border security and border control. Yeah, it's not going to play well to a select group of people. But I'm with you. I think the immigration reform is where the big issue is, but that's not a good soundbite or not. You can't. A wall is a tangible object that you can point to and say, look, this is working. Immigration reform is a lot of legal jargon that people don't want to think about.
Yep. Yeah, and it becomes just all the focus is on the wall, the actual issue. And even stuff like they like to say that, you know, violent crime increases when there's more illegal immigration. Well, violent crime's been falling since 93. I mean, it's been falling since the early 90s across the board, you know, so you can't really say that. And the other argument is that illegal immigrants take jobs away, but unemployment's 3.8, 3.9, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's not really happening. I mean, so it's like, yeah, the issue is immigration reform, but they keep distracting people just with all, you know, these, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think that's a bigger issue with, like, with the media, with whatever you hear repeated night after night on the news, you're going to think is a big issue when it's probably not. I mean, you can even look at gun control issues where, you know, and yes, we have, it seems like, a weekly mass shooting or a shooting that makes national news. But the gun violence, I believe, is also has been falling over the last decade, although the rise in suicides brings up, does impact the overall numbers.
Yeah. I mean, gun violence has been falling, too. But because of that, the shootings are more shocking to us because of that. So and when it's all, it's more shocking when it doesn't make any sense. Like if it happens in a city, you know, okay, well, that's just crime. But if it happens in a school, that's not supposed to, you know, it seems more newsworthy, I guess, is the right. It's, you know, they're more likely to. I mean, of course, they should cover it, but we notice it more, you know. And there is a rise from it. I mean, Columbine was really the first of its kind, and it's been increasing ever since. But no one really knows the reason why. There is no answer, really, that we know of at the moment. So
it's, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's just, people are horrible and evil, and if they want to do it, they're going to do it. There's no really justification or motivation. Although the cynic in me will say, the more that we cover a story in the media and we make, I don't want to say make heroes out of these people, but you make them famous, then you get the people who want to copy and want that notoriety on themselves. And is that an issue? But that's a whole other show to go down. So, yeah, I don't, Okay, so Trump's wall is definitely, I think, going to be a big issue throughout the next year. I wish someone could get to him and just say, look, we don't need the entire border a wall. Because there are a lot of other issues that come up as far as how do you secure the land to build the wall? What are you going to do? It's not an issue, whereas border security, illegal immigration reform, and even watching the ports. I know, you know, drugs are the big issue too that they say that they're trying to block. And there was the recent bust along the border of, it was the biggest fentanyl bust a couple weeks ago. So there is, and this is where it gets into that Democrat versus Republican, whereas Republicans are like, no, we need this whole border because these issues that aren't as big as we want to make them out to be. And then the Democrats are saying, well, no, we don't need it because these issues don't exist when they do. And it's a compromise factor where no one is willing to listen to each other and work on a sensible solution.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there was no compromise on it because it really just came down to whether or not the wall would be built. There was no compromise. I think, I mean, he used the DACA children as to kind of negotiate, which is a whole other issue, but you just can't really be for a wall if you're actually taking illegal immigration or immigration from seriously, because, you know, a lot of other things prevent. I mean, the simple fact is that the people that come over here, they just fly on planes and they stay. Usually, a wall isn't going to stop illegal immigration. I mean, it's a medieval solution to a problem that's modern. I mean, so I think even Republicans know that. I mean, they knew that on the campaign trail. No one ever, when Trump first proposed the wall in 2016, mm-hmm. campaigning with the rest of them, no one ever supported it back then, just his followers, you know. So I think that a lot of Republicans in Congress are supporting the wall just because they're afraid that their base back in their home state won't support them in the next election because they like Trump better than them. So. Or they're willing to take Trump's side rather than their side. So.
Right. And, I mean, yeah. We go back to the 2016 election, and you mentioned Trump promoting the wall, other Republicans not being into it. I think that's more – I would say that speaks more to how we ended up with Trump, because I think the Republican politicians don't want to deal with it, whereas the Republican voters do think it's an issue and have been disappointed in the Republican – politicians that they've elected, and if they're not going to do what their constituents want, then you end up with Trump.
Yeah, pretty much. It's the idea that, you know, the elites, it's like the idea that Jeb Bush was destined to be the candidate, and that mindset, you know, not necessarily Jeb Bush, but yeah, he was the outsider candidate, and they supported him simply because he was not like other politicians. Mm-hmm. And the same thing could happen to the Democratic candidates this time because there's going to be so many of them. Nate Silver on 538 did a study, or not study, but article, where he said that the more candidates in a primary race, the more likely an outsider will win. Someone who wasn't chosen by the establishment of the party, you know.
Yeah.
That could happen in this year, too.
Well, that brings up an interesting topic that we can segue into. So right now I believe there's 6 or 7 Democratic candidates, and over the weekend, as we record this, a couple of reporters, I believe one from CNN, one from CBS, and NBC maybe, were hanging out with Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. or I'm just going to call her Miss Harris, because I can never remember how to pronounce her first name. But it was a story about helping her pick out a jacket. I don't know if you saw this story.
Not this one.
Okay. They were in a thrift store, and all these female reporters tweet out, oh, you know, she found this jacket. We called it the Mardi Gras jacket and talked her into buying it. And then they were, I think, rightfully called out for, like, that's not for their journalistic integrity of being like, okay, are you covering her or are you hanging out with her? And then one of the reporters were like, well, you know, we're in this thrift store that was ran by a female who had overcome some hardship. And like, okay, great, that's a good story. And then angle, if you want to present it, your tweets didn't say that. Your tweets were talking about buying this jacket. And saw someone else comment that this favorability that Harris is getting from the press is very similar to what Obama got and what Hillary didn't, because Hillary is not a personable person. which had she been, maybe she would have won the election. But it seems to be, and after Harris announced her candidacy, CNN did a town hall with her, even though a few other candidates had announced their candidacy as well. And so it shows like this favoritism being shown towards her. So do you think, in a way, do you think the media has a role in who they want to win? And do you think they're going to be kind of pushing a specific person towards the candidacy?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, not as a whole, but individual cable news channels definitely do, and individual anchors. I had a problem with the town hall, which I'll go to in a second. But generally speaking, though, I turn on CNN in the background, not MSNBC. And even though CNN is fine, my problem is most of the anchors on there, if they're interviewing a candidate, they throw a lot of easy questions their way, especially like Van Jones. He interviewed, I think, Tulsi Gabbard. So I was interested to see what she would say to some of these questions, and the questions were just so easy. I mean, they were not. Van Jones is very far left, and of course, you know, she was too. But that's why, like, I prefer Jake Tapper, because even though I think he's kind of left wing, he asks the tough questions to everybody. And that kind of goes into, like, yeah, of course, the people who do these shows have, you know, are very either far left or far right. If it's Fox News, and they're far right, and so they're going to prefer certain candidates. You got that sense, you know, Sean Hannity especially. I mean, he kind of warmed up to Trump over the course of the primaries last time. With the Kamala Harris town hall, I lost interest in her campaign mainly because of the way she answered the questions, the way a lot of emotional appeals, just not very, not aggressive is the right word, but not the way that a candidate, I would expect a candidate to answer questions, and that just not in the same way Obama would, you know, that kind of candidate. And the questions were just too easy, I thought as well. It wasn't very, it didn't really give me any more information than what I had before I watched it, about her campaign. Do you get the sense that she's the favorite right now by the news media? Or I mean, since Joe Biden has announced, Bernie Sanders hasn't, they're the two we're waiting for.
Yeah, I think out of all the ones that have declared so far, I would say, I think her or Cory Booker are probably the two favorites because, in a sense, I think as far as Elizabeth Warren is concerned, I think she has too much baggage. And plus, I think Kamala Harris and Cory Booker can play into more segmented boxes that they can put the candidate in to go with identity politics.
Identity politics is an issue. The other thing that I'm disappointed in is that they're trying to conform to what they think the Democratic Party wants. And actually, when you're running against eight other candidates, it's actually the opposite of what you want to do. You want to actually talk about where you disagree with them, and then that actually puts you in the news, and it actually gets you more respect from your supporters because you're willing to actually confront your own party. That was the reason why Sanders went from having no support to half the support in 2016. He stood up against the Hillary Clinton, who was considered to be the favorite. So, and I'm just surprised they don't understand that. I just really don't. I mean, I think the only one so far that hasn't is promising is Amy Klobuchar. I'm supporting Sherrod Brown as for now, so I'll wait until he announces. But Amy Klobuchar has some has a pretty good chance to win. I think a lot of people in Minnesota like her. She won like 60% of the vote in 2018. It's kind of a swing state, so yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
Moderate Democrat.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about her. The only story that I saw, which is totally irrelevant to whether she should be considered or not, is apparently, I don't know if you ever watched the show Veep with Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
A few episodes back in the day.
But yeah. Apparently a lot of the outrageous elements of that show were inspired by this politician whose name I can't quote. I'm bad with names. But apparently, like, her, somebody that worked on her campaign, his brother worked on Veep. And so there's a story about, like, having somebody shave Julie Louis-Dreyfus's legs. And that's apparently based on a true story. But yeah, that's all I know. So I'm curious to know, more about these people. And like Gabbard?
Gabbard, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Gabbard.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I know she has a book coming out in April that I'm interested in reading just to find out more about her, because I don't know anything.
But she's a fascinating candidate because I just want to see what she does, because a lot of Republicans support her, actually. Steve Bannon likes her. So you have the Sanders people liking her, and then Steve Bannon, and or those kind of people. It's like, how would she do that? Like, there's no – and it's a – she's probably the most unique candidate so far. I don't think she has a chance of winning.
Right.
I'd like to see her.
Well, yeah, because if you're going to appeal to two different groups, then you can't win because you have to.
Yeah, unless you win the support of all the both the groups completely, maybe, but that's unlikely.
So. Yeah, I just you know, you're talking about standing out and showing what you disagree with. This past week, we also had Alexandra Cortez. Her Green Deal came out, which apparently was so bad that they had to take it off the website and then try to convince people that what they saw, they did not actually see. But Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, I think Cory Booker, all of them jumped on and said they support this Green Deal, which, again, if what was in there is what they anticipate, this should be, again, easy pickings for anyone to look at it and say, this is a terrible idea and will not be good for the country. So, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, they were conforming to what they think the Democratic Party wants by supporting this Green New Deal. So my thoughts on the Green New Deal overall, so disappointing to someone who actually wants to solve climate change over the course of the next 20, 30 years. So many problems with it. Okay, so the first problem is it's 14 pages. It reads more like a college paper written by Cortez rather than an actual bill. The New Deal, it's named after the New Deal. That wasn't one bill. It was like a series of pieces of legislation passed over 8 years in the 1930s. I mean, besides that, she's using it as a litmus test for these new candidates, even though it won't pass the Republican-led Senate. It definitely won't pass Trump's, you know, he won't sign into law. So what my question is overall is why introduce this now, rather than actually pass smaller pieces of legislation like Green New Jobs, you know, like that give it to Trump, and if he doesn't sign it, say he's against Green New Jobs. Clean Water Act. If he signs it against it, say he's against clean water. So you actually give us individual smaller pieces of legislation. Not to mention that it's filled with stuff like transportation, affordable housing. It's like this socialist utopia kind of bill, like everything. So which is, I guess, okay, that's the goal. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a mess on that side. But
yeah, you know, one of the things in there was the elimination, I guess, of air travel and getting high-speed trains all over the country.
Yeah.
Which I believe it was the senator from Hawaii was asked about it and said, yeah, that doesn't really work for Hawaii. We kind of need planes. But here in California, we've had a high-speed train being built that was supposed to go from Los Angeles to San Francisco. I believe the initial cost was a few $100 million. I believe it's now over $1 billion. And a day or two after the Green Deal was submitted, the new governor of California scrapped the high-speed rail train because there is no train. It's been going on for, I think, close to a decade, and they have nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
Now, if this was in response to the Green Deal and saying, like, no, we don't support it, you know, if this was, again, I saw speculation that Pelosi had it killed here in California just to kind of send a message. But, yeah, and it's one of these things that these are good ideas in theory. It's the execution of them that is the biggest issue, because you can say you want it.
And they work in Europe for different reasons. I mean, we're voting on a MARTA plan on March 19th, I think, next month here in Georgia, which we think will work. Because, I mean, like, for example, in places like Germany and France, they have high-speed rails because it's a small country geographically. Georgia is a small state. It's same size as, you know, Germany, France. So high-speed rail here or mass transit would work because the way we travel to Atlanta, you know, it depends on the region you're in. We can't eliminate air travel because the U.S. geographically is pretty big, you know. So it's, it depends on where it is and how you're investing in it. It's not a simple solution, as she's saying it is.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know the specifics, but I'm guessing you can't if you want to put on a high-speed rail, it's not as easy as just taking the existing train tracks that are already laid and putting on a new train on the tracks. Like, you have to build a system that is accessible for whatever the high-speed rail is. And yeah, if you're going from, you know, let's say Atlanta to, I don't know what another major metropolis in Georgia is, but it's smaller than going from LA to San Francisco. And with all the farming communities that we have through Central California, it's, but then again, the Green Deal also eliminates all cattle, apparently. So
yeah, cow farts, the yes. polluting the atmosphere.
Yes, everyone's got to go vegan.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. I mean, it's funny. When talking with friends about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I used to say that I like her enthusiasm. Now I'm not really saying that anymore. I'm just kind of against most of what, because even Pelosi said that she liked the enthusiasm. And it's like, okay, that's true. But at the same time, if you're going to hinder the party's chances at actually passing legislation or getting new people elected to office because you're just moving so far to the left, or you're just giving this litmus test to the new candidates, you know, running for president, that's not good. Yeah, that you can't do that.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think we mentioned it on the last show, it's whenever someone calls her out for anything she says or, you know, does, she always then takes to Twitter to attack them and, you know, back, you know, defend herself, which is very similar to what Trump does and gets, and whereas Trump is like seen as being, you know, unpresidential or whatever, AOC is just like, well, that's her. And it's that, doesn't, you know, differential of, is it okay for one, but not the other because you agree with one and not the other, or are they both needing to grow thicker skins and not,
Yeah. Well, I think Trump is more unhinged with his tweets. I haven't read too many tweets by Cortez, but she's definitely more well-spoken usually than Trump. But yeah, it's that just that showing how Twitter's become a weapon for political weapon, you know, the same way that Facebook has. That's that's the new deal in terms of using Twitter, Facebook to sell an idea, you know. Or on Facebook, it's the case of trying to, it's the fake news thing. It's the manipulating people through, their own niche kind of political circle.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people over the, you know, when Trump first took office and using Twitter the way that he was, were kind of shocked by it and appalled because he's the first president to do so. Whereas, I think going forward, you're going to see more and more of that. And even when I was out in D.C., a couple of weeks ago, we were on one of the tours, and when the tour guides mentioned that Trump, you know, he could send a message to the Wall Street Journal and get it in there. They have 2 million subscribers. Or he'd go to Twitter, where he has 22 million followers. So it's like, which one has the better reach? But yeah, I definitely think social media is obviously going to be a bigger role, much like the way radio was when it first started and politicians taking that, and then television, you know, the debate, the Kennedy Nixon debate was kind of the first use of television to kind of show how it can be used to skew people's perceptions. But yeah, I think social media is definitely going to be a bigger issue.
Yeah, it's gotten so bad that now some people don't even consider New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal to be even like legitimate news. They want their news from like left-wing, right-wing sites, which is really dangerous, I think. It shows how people, I mean, I prefer reading the first news story I read about something to be not biased until after I read it, then I'll listen to both sides. But yeah, some people just want the biased version immediately. Which is not good for the future. actually, it's funny though, even though I vote Democrat, I was really excited to see Bill Weld announce his candidacy. Well, not yet, but exploratory committee. I would love that. Yeah, a Republican running against Trump, because it increases the chances he won't win. But also, yeah, I would love to see someone. Because it sounds like from what I read about him, Bill Weld is a moderate Republican, which is a dying breed.
Yeah, he was, if memory serves correctly, the Libertarian vice presidential candidate in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I know there was a lot of I shouldn't say a lot, but there was some resistance from libertarians when he was chosen, because I think he had been a Republican in other offices and they didn't really consider him a true libertarian. And so, yeah, it's an interesting thing now that he is saying that he will primary against Trump, which, again, I say, maybe I have blinders on, but low economy, gas prices holding steady, North Korea not bombing everything. Again, if Trump can stay out of his own way and we don't experience a recession, what do you run against him on? Other than you just don't like him, or you think he's crazy, or, he tweets too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the economy is the biggest question. That's usually the sign of whether or not a president will win re-election, whether or not it's improving or if it's in a recession. In terms of other issues, I mean, the Mueller report will, I assume, be released before the election. I mean, at this point, who knows? But and that's an issue. It's interesting because it used to be people didn't know about it and didn't care. Now, both sides want to see the report. And it's likely that we will see it because William Barr, what it looks like, would publish the report fully. That's an issue that will be interesting to see if people, because it's an issue that I don't know if people really are reading about as much as the political junkies are. I mean, there's some pretty serious stuff in there. In terms of other issues they're going to run against, I think that the economy, while unemployment is really low, 3.8, 3.9, wages still have not increased as much as people would have liked them to. And the question is, if the economy is supposedly so good, why are we hurting so much? That's going to be, I think that would be the angle the Democrats should take, whoever wins the nomination, that I would advise them to, to take. Hopefully they'll be bold enough to propose legislation or propose ideas on the campaign trail to solve that. I don't know if they will or not, but depends on the candidate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so let's go back to the candidates that have announced so far. And one of their issues that has come up a few times and the Democratic candidates seem to support is eliminating private health care and moving all towards Medicare for all or government. Which, from what I've read, was the whole goal of the Affordable Care Act, was to somewhat make it to where it failed so that you had to go in this direction to where the government takes it over. But is that an issue that, because the Affordable Care Act did raise a lot of prices for people, and some to a degree that was not affordable, is that going to be an issue come election time?
Well, the Affordable Care Act, I think, was a public option where it wasn't so much to eventually get everybody to sign on to it. It was more of just making sure that everybody had health care. That way the insurance pool was bigger and more people, would have affordable health care. Because otherwise you go to the emergency room, you're charged thousands of dollars for something that shouldn't be that much if you have health care. In terms of increasing prices, I think health care prices have been increasing over the years. I don't know if it really increased it by that much more than it would have. That wouldn't have had been passed. I'm pretty pessimistic on any healthcare plan because when it comes down to it, Americans are too unhealthy to have any healthcare plan really work well. I mean, more people are taking money out of the insurance pool than are putting into it. Healthcare works. I mean, socialized healthcare works in European countries because they're just more healthier than us. And, I guess I wouldn't call it socialist healthcare. I would call it, the Medicare for single payer healthcare. That's the proper term for it. In terms of why I support, I would expansion of Medicare probably, slowly, not instantly. If you do it instantly, it just causes shock to the system. I'm definitely not for eliminating private health insurance. That's way too, it's crazy. But I guess expanding Medicare would be my stance on it. Yeah.
Yeah. I am for government not being involved in healthcare other than on a regulatory basis, which, I'm not sure exactly what all that would entail, but I think the government has bigger issues than, and I think obviously healthcare is expensive and medications are, we have to figure out a way to get things at a reduced cost or lower cost than what they are now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that because I have wild theories on why that is. None of which are probably backed up in fact. They're more just my own conspiracy theories, but
it's a really personal issue. I mean, it was the most important issue in 2018 because everybody deals with it. I mean, they've had those hospital visits where they find out that if they hadn't had health insurance, it would have cost thousands of dollars, you know, or they don't have health insurance and it costs thousands of dollars, you know, for an operation. But it's just crazy to think that, I mean, I know people that have gone to, they lived in Italy for a month, had a health issue. It only cost them $150 to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, for a surgery in Canada, it was going to cost so much less. And so the question is, well, we just move to a future where to get a something like that fixed, you just leave the country and then have it there, come back.
Yeah,
your own vacation.
That's what Rand Paul's doing. So,
yeah, I mean, I think even Sarah Palin has said that in a quote once, that she used to go over to Canada from Alaska just to get cheaper healthcare. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I just, you know, going back or continuing with the candidates so far, like I said, you have the healthcare issue, the Green Deal, and then with, I think it's Virginia and New York just passing third trimester abortion laws. Like, I think that's going to be a bigger issue come election time, which right now it's, there's only those two states, but if the momentum is there, will other states then, and you know, Planned Parenthood is always a big issue come elections and how much money they get from the government and how much they spend in donations. And then like you said, with the amount of candidates that we're going to have, which ones are going to actually separate and go against the grain as opposed to just all agree? Because if everyone agrees on everything, then how do you pick which one to vote for?
Yeah, exactly. We'll go into abortion just real quick. I mean, yeah, that definitely motivates the base more than anything. Because the next time, the next president, or if it's just Trump stays in office, will decide who replaces Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who likely won't survive another 4 years. So whoever wins that will decide the health, the abortion, you know, the next ruling that will decide whether or not Roe v. Wade will be overturned. And with the trimester bill, from what I understand, it's just a continuation of if the mother's life is in danger, or some other things. It's very rare, but they're presenting it like it happens all the time, which it doesn't really. So, I mean, I'm pro-choice, you know, first trimester, farther along you go, the less likely it is because it has to, you know, threaten the mother's life or something. So I haven't read too much about that issue. But yeah, and with the other candidates, I mean, yeah, if they keep conforming to the same, what they expect the party, what they will want, the same thing will happen as in the Republican primaries. An outsider will actually get more attention because they're, you know, or maybe not. Maybe the Democratic Party won't work like that. And in that case, we'll just have a candidate that's like a generic Democrat that won't win because they're not bold in anything. They're not, you know, assertive. They're, you know, which is why I don't want to happen, but it's a possibility.
Okay, so hypothetical situation here is, as the primary season starts up in 2020, and economy's going well, everything looks good, Democrats don't have a solid plan to run on, or every candidate is, you know, just basically the same. So let's say the Democrats decide to just kind of concede the election to Trump for another 4 years. Be like, you know, we can't beat him. So do you put up a candidate as a patsy, or do you throw someone in there who can give a fight, but then maybe tarnished for a future election?
Oh, you mean the 2020 candidate if they're expected to lose, you mean?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, it's an interesting question because, I mean, in that case, the question would be who's going to run in 2024. You're saying if they're running in 2020, they have no chance of running in 2020.
I'm saying if they lose in 2020, it pretty much guarantees that no one would take them serious as a serious candidate in 2024.
Sure. I get what you mean. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm actually pretty optimistic about Trump losing in 2020, just because as long as they nominate Biden, someone like Sherrod Brown, Amy Klobuchar, someone who can win the Rust Belt, because it's really all it's about is winning those four states at this point. It's because, I mean, Trump did lose the popular vote by 3 million. It doesn't mean anything, but it shows that his approval rating's never been above, you know, 42%, 41%.
I think it's at 52 right now.
Approval rating?
Yeah.
Because it should be, I think it's 40% right now.
I think Rasmussen. Is it Rasmussen or Rasputin, whatever the...
That's not Rasputin. I think it's Rasmussen.
Yeah. Rasmussen, yeah. I think they had him at like 50 to 52 this last week.
Really? Because among everybody, the popular, like everybody, it's around 40 on average. 538, everybody's reporting that. But I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't sound right. It should. It's pretty. His approval ratings are pretty low. It's always been hovering around 39 to 43%. But from what I've read. Anyway, in terms of who should run if they're destined to lose, I mean, I don't like Kirsten Gillibrand or Cory Booker at all. So I mean, I guess that would show. You're gonna throw someone under the bus for the future. I mean, yeah, Kirsten Gillibrand's the worst candidate to ever run against Trump. But she, I mean, I would, yeah, be if she got the nomination. But. Yeah, in terms of other candidates that could beat him, I mean, yeah, it's just about winning the Rust Belt at this point. And Florida, you know, it's always a swing state. Yeah, it's going to come down to like 6 or 7 states, really, so like last time. I mean.
Okay, well, then my next topic would be this recent attack on, and I'm using attack in air quotes right now, Jussie Smollett, mm-hmm. the actor... from Empire, who a couple weeks ago claimed that he was out in Chicago at 2 a.m. and two guys jumped him, poured bleach on him, put a noose around his neck, allegedly yelled, "This is MAGA country." And are you familiar with this case? Are you?
Yeah, I heard about when it first happened. The allegations that it was a staged attack, I just heard about. Actually, when you mentioned it, I looked it up. I don't know. I mean, it sucks either way. If it sucks if it's a hate crime, it sucks if he's staged. I don't know. Yeah, I think hate crimes were slightly on the rise, but and of course they tie that to Donald Trump winning. I don't know. I mean, maybe, I know for sure though they've been falling since over the last 50 years mm-hmm. for obvious reasons, but I don't think that, yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, Charlottesville was so attention, like Charlottesville is such a big thing that I think everybody assumed that that's. Was the future of America. It's not really. I mean, it was a one incident, you know. But
yeah, I'm just okay. So my thought here with the Jussie Smollett case is if it turns out to be a hoax, which I mean, his story had so many unbelievable details to begin with that mm-hmm. I kind of suspected that it was going to be, because it seems to be more I was looking up before we started recording a list of like 70 different fake race attacks since Trump took office. They seem to be on their, I don't know if they're on the rise, but they are happening. And then you have the recent situation with the Covington school kids in DC where, you know, they were alleged to mocked or whatever, mm-hmm. used racist taunts against a Native American when the full video came out, it showed a different story than what was reported. So, but it seems like in these cases, the media, a lot of left wing, celebrities, all of them jump on and start accusing Trump supporters, Trump himself. You know, I had a friend tell me that basically only white supremacists wear MAGA gear, which, like I said, after the Covington situation, I was in D.C. The days afterwards and saw like 3 or 4 different school groups, which all had probably about 10, 12 kids wearing MAGA gear. And I'm guessing they weren't racist, but probably just because they're in D.C., bought them as a souvenir. If these cases continue, or if people keep trying to criticize Trump supporters, will that actually tip people to vote more in support of Trump because getting tired of being falsely accused or being, I guess it's kind of like it's bigotry in a reverse sense.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's true that if there's a Trump supporter that isn't racist, they'd be pretty offended by being called white supremacist when they're not. Same reason why, like, if a Democrat would be called a communist, they'd be offended because they're not really a communist. Right. It's kind of taking the extremes. Yeah, I mean, you know, with the thing on the cap, the Lincoln Memorial, the kid who was smirking, I think. I mean, that's free speech. It's really the controversy is whether or not he was polite or rude. You know, Which, okay, if he was or wasn't still free speech. I mean, in terms of actually, like, yeah, in terms of whether or not it would move people toward Trump if they keep calling that out, I think it all comes from when he called the white supremacists in Charlottesville very fine people. It just immediately gave us the impression that he's trying to win those people over. He's trying to maintain that support. So that, and that's bad. But at the same time, though, I mean, you could look, for example, Tulsi Gabbard. Duke actually endorsed her, which is a kind of surprising. They endorsed a Democrat and they endorsed her, but she immediately denounced David Duke. And so you could argue Trump could have done that as well. Yeah, I don't know. It depends on how people perceive, you know, it's just perception, I guess. Because the truth is that there's so few white supremacists now. I mean, it's not like it's an issue that's really not in the same way it was in the 60s, 70s, you know. It's really the culture wars, really. It's one of those things.
Yeah, sorry, I was trying to look up, because you mentioned Trump saying very fine people, and I had just read an article a couple of days ago talking about this, where, again, Trump is a terrible public speaker, but apparently his quote was, it was like two different thoughts being ran on the same path. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't actually say, you have fine people. What he was trying to say, that there were two groups of people in Charlottesville, you know, aggravating each other, basically, and was saying, like, you have fine people on both sides. So it wasn't a full compliment to the racist people, but I can't find the quote, so I'll have
yeah, to. Yeah, it's just this general sense that, I mean, his first entry into politics was the birther movement, Obama, yeah, Born America. It's just this general sense that he's either racist or trying to win racists over. And yeah, generally speaking, it's just a feeling on, you know.
And then, okay, that's where I think the media comes into play as well, is because for 2 years, we've pretty much heard, 3 years, we've heard Trump's a racist, Trump is this. But again, he was a public figure for 30, 40 years before becoming a politician. There was never any, you know, racial, I don't want to say attacks, but thoughts of racism with him. He was, you know, friends with Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, presented an award or got an award along with Rosa Parks, I believe. And it kind of goes back to this Mueller report as well, where when you're being told one consistent view, whether it's right or not, does it get into the psyche of people who then, if they don't like Trump, are just going to go ahead and assume that this is truth?
Oh yeah, that psychologically, that's true. Yeah, for a lot of issues. Yeah, well, that's separate from the Mueller investigation, but with race though, it's just for example, his opening speech was Mexicans, some I assume are good people. They're, you know, rapists, drugs coming over, you know, all of that. A good example is like if Hurricane Katrina happened in Trump's presidency. You know, George Bush got a lot of flack from that. Mm. They never called George Bush racist though, even though he mishandled that, the whole thing. If it happened like this year, they'd use race as an argument against Trump in that case because of his previous comments. So that is true what you're saying. Yeah, that is definitely true. That it would be handled, the perception would be different between him and Bush. And especially Obama, with other issues. But with the Mueller investigation, though, I just think it's funny that people are just talking about Trump collusion, even though, like, five people have already been indicted. There's been, like, so many different, I mean, organizations, people, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, so many people going to prison over this. And it's just,
But they haven't been indicted for collusion yet.
Yeah. Stuff that involved in collusion, other stuff like money laundering,
things that I think if you pretty much look at everyone in Washington, they're probably all guilty. But I just want to say real quick, to try to make this a even podcast, is you have the people who don't like Hillary based on things that the media has said about Hillary, whether or not they are true or not. So it goes both ways. I'm not trying to defend Trump here.
It's a strategy used by campaigns, actually. It's a strategy I would use. Use something they've said in the past to paint a whole portrait, a whole picture of what they are as a person.
Yeah.
Use all the time in campaigns.
No, I believe it's part of the Alinsky, I really need to stop saying people's names. Alinsky's rules for...
rules for radicals, yeah.
Yes, which Andrew Breitbart talks about in his book Righteous Indignation, where it's, if you can make a person toxic, then you don't have to defend yourself against anything they say, because you can just point out that they're racist, sexist, homophobic, and their opinion means nothing.
We know who people on the left didn't know who Saul Alinsky even is, actually. They when like, who? Like, or it's like the whole Pizzagate thing. Mm-hmm. The what was it? The Hillary Clinton was running a prostitution ring out of a pizza restaurant. I don't know.
Again, it goes back to the point where, as we say on the show, question everything. So if you hear something, don't just say that's true. Look it up, find more sources, and check your sources to see where it's coming from. But, I mean, obviously this next year is going to be, it's probably going to be painful, because I saw a commercial last night saying the Democrat debates start in June. And so we've got a whole year of just primaries and debates starting up. You're still holding out that Sherrod Brown?
Yeah, Sherrod Brown and Joe Biden. I'm waiting for them, yeah. Although Joe Biden, at this point, I feel like there's going to be a backlash against him if he wins. It's like the Democrats are feeling like it's meant for Joe Biden to run, and that has a bad connotation to it. I don't know. Yeah, it's Sherrod Brown would be my pick. I doubt he's going to win. I'll probably support him. Amy Klobuchar has some potential. Yeah, so far those are my picks.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'll have to look into Amy Klobuchar. I don't know anything about her. And then Tulsi Gabbard, like I said, from what I've seen and read, she seems like the most centrist candidate, which I think is what ultimately we need, whether it comes from Democrat or Republican or Libertarian, just someone that will play more to everyone instead of being so fringe.
Yeah. Are you supporting anybody like Bill Weld, or like, is there anybody like you would support early on rather than like Election Day?
I'll wait and see. I want to keep an open mind. Like I said, right now, I was actually talking with a friend who's a diehard Republican a few weeks ago, and we were both like, we would like to see Trump lose just to calm the mass hysteria that goes on with everything that he does, where maybe people could just relax a bit. But at the same time, part of me wants Trump to win again, just to watch people's heads explode and figure out like why he was so terrible. How is he winning two elections and then trying to figure out which other country would be involved with stealing the election? Yeah.
Well, the question is though, was did he win because Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate? And that's why I'm wondering is that she was the most hated candidate ever besides Trump to ever run. So if we have a candidate that's just likable, just generic, that could easily beat Trump, I think.
And I would agree. And it goes back to what we were saying about Kamala Harris with the press. If you can get someone who is personable and likable, and if the press, because there's a documentary, I don't know if it's still on Netflix. It was called Media Malpractice, and it was all about the 08 election, and talked about how the favorable coverage that Obama got probably gave him like a 10-point bump in the polls.
Yep.
And if you take that out, then McCain actually would have won the race. But, the media, and then, which comes down to another question, is everyone talks about collusion with Russia, but what about our own media collusion, where if the media heavily promotes one candidate over the other, are they influencing how people vote? And is that is that something that should be looked into?
Well, it's looked into. It's just free speech, so you can't really do anything about it. I mean, you'd have to, there's really nothing to do about it. We used to not be able to see three news stations, CBS, NBC, ABC, Walter Cronkite, Trusted Man. Yeah, I mean, that used to not be like that. And then news became entertainment, so.
Well, and that's one of the things with the 2016 election, too, is you can look back at the coverage that Trump got, and you can say that, a lot of these news outlets helped promote him because they thought he would be an easy victory for Hillary.
They promoted him just by covering him because he was so fascinating to listen to and watch. Like, I mean, just a dumpster fire, basically. I mean, even the left-wing news sites, constantly had stories about him because they assumed, well, our readers hate him, so they may, they'll probably read about it. Yeah. You know, so that's, yeah.
And Trump is good for ratings for the left wing. Yeah.
And that's the thing now is that the Democrat candidate will actually have to get news coverage, so they'll have to say controversial things. So at this point, yeah, I mean, so that's why the Green New Deal could become the stuff like that could become, you know, part of the Democratic Party platform. And like, making healthcare, you know, private healthcare illegal because it just gets news coverage. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be get to that point where it's just trying to win over the extreme, the left and the left wing and right wing sides.
It's true. Sad, sad, but true.
It is. Yeah.
All right. Well,
the future's very bleak.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back in a month with, I'm sure, like 80 more new candidates and stories. And we'll see if the government has shut down again. Or if we're just going to keep adding to our trillion-dollar debt because, hey, it's not the politicians' money, so why do they care? Brandon, do you have any? Oh, we didn't mention you actually went to an Elizabeth Warren function over the weekend. Tell us about that real quick.
Yeah, I got some good pictures. That's really why I went. Because I'm not a huge fan of Warren's campaign so far. I actually was a fan of her before all this, but the way she's handled the Pocahontas Native American scandal was just... you know, the funny thing is she should have just ignored it to begin with. Said that who doesn't like Pocahontas? You know, everybody does. She should have just moved on and not done the DNA test. Yeah, the speech was good. She came by our hometown, or our local, not hometown, but local. Gwinnett County is like a swing county, basically, in Georgia. It's kind of going to decide the next couple elections. It's kind of the suburbs of Atlanta. So, yeah, it was a good speech. It's kind of cool seeing someone national, you know, national politics come by and speak. Crowd was really enthusiastic. I mean, not really much else to really say about it. Yeah, I mean, I like Elizabeth Warren as a senator. I'm not sure if she's the best person running against Trump. We'll have to see.
Yeah, again, I think the Cherokee thing, if she would have just come out and said, you know, this is what I was told as a kid. I believed it because I was a kid. Would have been one thing, but then when, you know, when new documents come out that she filled out that said that she was Cherokee when she was practicing law in Texas. Yeah, maybe. I think she shot herself in the foot. So, which would give Trump a lot of...
Yeah, well, in the age of Trump, skeletons in your closet and baggage means nothing now compared to... like. So it's a whole new ballgame. You have to play this, you know...
Yeah.
I mean, Trump had so many skeletons that he still got elected. They have to know that they just keep on, you know, never apologize, just... Or never apologize, but, like, clarify what you mean, you know.
Or...
you know, pivot, you know, not...
Yeah. Do you think it matters more, skeletons for a politician, as opposed to Trump, who wasn't a politician? So, entering the race, yeah, he obviously... had not really cared about his public image. I mean, his public image was what it is now. This, you know, this boastful playboy, just whatever. Whereas, you know, like I remember in 2004 when Obama was running for state senator of Illinois, his opponent Jack Ryan was forced to drop out of the race after. Divorce proceedings with him and his wife Jerry Ryan came to light, and and the Republican Party didn't have anybody to take his place, and so they tried to get Mike Ditka, you know, coach of the Chicago Bears, and his response was, yeah, I'm a former athlete. I have way more skeletons in my closet than this guy did. It, probably not a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, I think skeletons are worse in the closets of politicians than billionaires, because for some reason people distrust politicians more than billionaires. I don't know why that is. They should distrust them equally, arguably more so on the billionaire side. But yeah, I don't know why that is. It's just part of the psyche of, you know, Americans to distrust the leaders in charge.
I guess it goes with celebrity too. I mean, Trump was a celebrity, so you know, we look at, you know, Kardashians and all those reality stars where we don't really care about their baggage because. Well, I really don't know why it scares me, but
makes them more authentic and
I guess. Air
quotes authentic.
Yeah. Anyway, if you're listening, you let us know. Do skeletons affect you? What do you think is the biggest downfall for a politician? But like I said, we'll be back next month with more political stuff. Brandon, thanks for coming on. Always a great conversation and great counterpoint. So
yeah, as always.
Remember, as always, question everything and do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.